This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Over the course of Bryan Cranston's acting career, he's played many quirky, memorable characters. Jerry Seinfeld's dentist, the dad in Malcolm in the Middle. But Cranston himself says the first line of his obituary will no doubt identify him as the man who played Walter White, the notorious chemistry teacher turned meth dealer on the TV show Breaking Bad. That character made Cranston a megastar.
Walt, please, let's both of us stop trying to justify this whole thing and admit you're in danger.
Who are you talking to right now? Who is it you think you see? Do you know how much I make a year? I mean, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. You clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Breaking Bad's fifth and final season ended this fall. But even before the finale, Cranston was already immersed in a very different role. He was cast the part of President Lyndon Baines Johnson in the play All the Way, written by Robert Schenken. It sold out its entire run at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge, and following that success, it's headed to Broadway. Previews start next month, and the show officially opens in New York City in March. When Cranston was still in rehearsals at the ART last September, I sat down with him during one of his lunch breaks to talk about his different experiences on stage and screen and the challenges of playing the 38th Vice President of the United States.
LBJ was known as someone whose public persona could be very different than his private one. And that, of course, has a fascinating parallel with Walter White. Did you find that having played that Walter character and then going to play another character, LBJ, who was often different in public than he was when the door shut?
Right.
How did having played the Walter White character then help you play this LBJ character with that parallel?
To me, I was just attracted to the dynamic nature of this man and the hugely important condition that he found himself in, not only as the leader of the free world, so to speak, as the president, and ultimately having literally lives in the palm of his hand that will be determined by his decision-making. And to a lesser degree, Walter White had the same kind of dynamic sensibility that his decision-making could create that environment of life and death, one on one side of the law and the other on the other. But truly, it was the entire package. Yes, the polarity of the man, the craziness of the office. And, you know, I think if he were alive today and diagnosed, I think he would have been diagnosed as bipolar, because he had severe bouts of depression. And then on a twist of a knife, he would turn and be positive and eager to tackle issues. He was a problem solver and an astute politician.
Tell you what, you leave Eastland to me, I'll deal with him. You get your agents down there to Neshoba County real quick and wrap this thing up.
Yes, sir, Mr. President. When did you talk to Eastland about Dulles going down there?
Oh, I made that part up. Hoover hates Dulles. Ever since he got the top job at the CIA and Hoover didn't. Might still send Dulles down there to keep Hoover working hard. Problem here is there's three sovereignties involved. There's the United States, the state of Mississippi, and J. Edgar Hoover.
A question I'm sure you're asked often, but I think people are always eager to know this. How do you prepare for a role like this? You know, for example, you're doing a Texas accent. What's your strategy for embodying a character, especially someone who's been a real person?
Well, that's the whole point, is that at some point, when you first start out, the character is outside of you because you haven't done the work to bring him in. And the more you read, not just the text, but also biography, which I have, and other biographies written by other people who have written about him, and you get a sensibility about the man, and then pretty soon, hopefully, you start to pull that character inside of you, and then you start filtering your thought process through that filter of him, and at the same time you're working on
you know, the Texas accent and his speech pattern and how he'd talk all the time. And he was a good old boy. And he, you know, like, boy. And he'd have that kind of twang and drawl. And it's fun to play with, but you live with it for a while, and pretty soon it just gets into the fabric of that character.
So very much a psychological, emotional, mental transformation as well as a physical one.
Oh, God, it's everything. If I don't bring everything, every bit of my senses on stage, I will get lost. Yeah, it kicks my ass. I'm telling you, we haven't even opened yet. And just the rehearsal process is just so intense. You know, we have one day off a week, technically. Mondays is our one day off. But there's no day off for me.
Because even if you're not acting with your rest of your cast, you're thinking constantly?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I got a nose in a book or in the script, and you're always developing. And I just don't feel I have any time to let that go. So when the character, and we won't know until after the first few shows that we have with an audience, that I feel like, okay, he's deeply rooted in there, and I can completely relax and allow what I've worked on to come out.
You can all relax. For Christ's sake, we got an election to win.
Hoover will just drag his feet.
Not if I light a fire on his ass. Jay,
Mr. President.
When you do movies or television, you film a lot of scenes, pick the best one. That becomes the final and only scene the public sees. You're going to have a chance here to redo it night after night after night. How does it feel to have that opportunity?
Good, because you can erase the mistakes of the previous night.
Or possibly make some.
Or make some new ones. That's a saying we have. I made some new mistakes today. That was good. Yeah, that's the one thing about live theater that you cannot compare to anything else, is that here it goes. It's a slingshot, and once that fires, you're off and running. Whatever happens, happens. And hopefully you know the text and the character so well that it's second nature, that the work you've done and where you're physically supposed to be on the stage at any given point is just automatic. You just go there like a homing pigeon, and you don't have to think about it.
Bryan Cranston, many people know you primarily for your TV roles, but you've also had a lot of stage roles. You've done Sam Shepard and Ibsen and Shakespeare, mm-hmm. But you have also said that this LBJ play has taken you a bit out of your comfort zone. What about it do you have any trepidations about?
I didn't have any trepidations about doing it, deciding to do it. And I don't have any trepidations about when we're ready to go. It's just that I just don't feel that I have to attack this role just like Lyndon Johnson attacked the presidency. He, with vigor and such tremendous aggression. And I feel the parallel there with me approaching this task. It's Herculean, and it's kicking my ass. It truly is. I'm completely consumed by it. And I collapse at 9:30 at night, and I'm out. Of course, that's bad now, because we would still be doing the play at 9:30.
That's just intermission time.
So exactly, I have to now adjust my body clock to perform at its peak level at 7:30 at night. Now,
just when you're fading.
Maybe just when I'm starting to feel like energy is fading, I have to just start now.
Well, and I have read that you're training for this almost as if it's a physical exercise, your diet and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's physically demanding and requires conditioning in a sense.
I didn't want anything to interrupt my need to have full focus on this. So I can't get sick. I'm loading up on my vitamins, and I'm eating really well. I don't drink, you know, so I'm going to bed early. And by doing so, I've lost some weight, and which is good for me as a performer, because then I feel stronger and it'll support me through this venture. But the truth is that LBJ really fought his weight all the time. And there's even a line in the play about Bird has him on a diet. And
his wife.
So unfortunately, I'm a little thin, but we're gonna have to get away with that. I thought, well, I could eat a bunch of cheesecake and potato chips and get heavy, but then my body was.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if your body reacts, you know, antithetical to what your mind is requiring, you're in trouble.
You're now 57 years old.
Yeah. What? Speak up.
And you know, you clearly are at an apex of a career, even that had been long and successful.
So are you saying now it's on the downhill slide?
I assume
I'm
not.
If I'm at the apex, then there's nowhere else.
That's true. I should have picked another
Thanks
word.
Thanks very much.
You are at the top and might even keep going, actually.
Yeah.
But do you think, I mean, what has it been like at this stage of your career and age to continue to have these roles in which you blossom and flourish? I mean, is it very rewarding?
I'm not a believer of past lives, but if those listeners are, I must have been terribly mistreated in a past life because I am now reaping the rewards of something, or maybe they're mistakenly, you know, attributed to me, but I have been just so fortunate to be able to have this as my body of work. It's just been a huge gift.
I imagine it has to be a little annoying that when you've had a career as long as you have, that you end up, even though it was, you hit it big with one thing in particular, that ends up defining you. Is that a little annoying sometimes?
No, I mean, you're an actor is lucky if they have that one thing. That, otherwise, you're not defined.
Right. That's true.
You go from job to job, and you just want to be able to pick and choose good work.
Jason Alexander, the Seinfeld guy, went to BU, and about a year ago, he did one of those master classes. And I remember someone in the audience asked him a question about that, the sort of like, do you worry that everyone will always think of you as George? And he was clearly irritated by the question. I think he felt like, oh, when will people think of me as anything but that? But it's sort of a job hazard, you know, when you have those mega successes.
It is. You look for opportunities. And Jason's a friend, and he when he was able to land George Costanza on Seinfeld, a landmark comedy show, and it created a tremendous amount of opportunity for him. And in the same sense, it also puts you in a box that he now has to diligently work out of, you know, so that he's not just that guy.
Do you feel like you're in that box?
No. He is more distinctive looking than I am.
Right. And it's hard for him to remake himself very much.
Yeah, I have a chameleon type of look that I can change my look and adjust, you know, things, so my facial hair or head hair or things like that, and I look different. So I'm more fortunate in that case.
A big picture industry question: movies used to be where actors wanted to do their thing. Obviously, there's a transformation of television, and the most innovative things in TV are now happening on cable and with Netflix. You're very much part of that. I mean, Breaking Bad is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested both in what you watch on TV and your general thoughts about that, this transformation that's happening.
Oh, I don't watch television. It's for the masses. No, I don't watch a lot of television because I just don't have time.
You know, when I have a moment to recreate, as opposed to create, then I usually watch something like baseball. I'm a big Dodger fan, and so I'll follow them and just kind of allow my mind to go to blubber a little bit and appreciate just the simplicity of the game. I haven't, to be honest, I haven't turned on a television in a month other than to watch my show for that hour on Sunday night.
Really?
That's all I've seen.
Your sole focus has been preparing for this play.
Yeah.
You mentioned you're a Dodgers fan.
Yeah.
Do you plan to visit Fenway while you're here? Or have you already made
a
visit?
I've been to Fenway a few times.
Okay.
I love the Red Sox. In 1975, I picked the Red Sox as my American League team because we didn't have it. And they never played each other unless they were actually in the World Series. So I wanted to have an American League team. And I was a big Dodger fan, so naturally I hated the Yankees. Since the Brooklyn days, when they were there. And I thought, who else hates the Yankees? The Red Sox hates the Yankees. I love those guys. And so I've been rooting for the Red Sox since 75.
Robert Shankin, the playwright of All the Way, has written or is working on a sequel that covers LBJ's second term. Any sense yet whether you might be the LBJ in that play as well?
Do you know, when I first heard that he was writing, you know, the sequel, so to speak, of All the Way, I thought, oh, no, because I want to be able to put my impression on this. And that's, you know, partly because I, because I'm taking ownership, I can't lease this character. I have to own him. I have to bring him in and embrace him for everything he is, warts and all. And when you do that, you do have a proprietary kind of feeling toward it. And if someone else now goes on and does that LBJ in some other role, I would like, you know, like, that's my guy. Don't take my guy. But it'll remain to be seen. We have to see how this production goes and how we all feel. And hopefully, I mean, it's been a great process so far and very collaborative and inclusive. And I'm looking forward to a great run.
Bryan Cranston, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All the Way with Bryan Cranston will open March 6th at Broadway's Neil Simon Theater. And now another storm update. As many of you are commuting home or preparing to head home, snow is continuing to fall outside and expected to pick up the pace overnight. Governor Patrick is asking employers to let workers out early today to try to ensure a safe commute and let road crews clear the snow. He's also asking residents to be smart since outdoor thermometer readings are expected to drop below zero tonight.
The temperatures will be extreme, and that's a serious hazard, not just for ice conditions, but for the impact on human beings. We want people to be mindful of that and to exercise extreme caution.
In terms of snowfall, meteorologists say some inland areas may get only 6 inches, but parts of the coast could get up to 16. Not too many delays have been reported on the MBTA or commuter rail, but several flights out of Logan have been canceled. A coastal flood advisory is in effect, and a warning starts in about a half hour at 4 p.m. That's in anticipation of high tides at midnight tonight and noon tomorrow. WBUR's Jack Lepiarz joins us now from the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency bunker in Framingham. Hi, Jack, and I believe you just got off the Mass Pike heading out there. So what were conditions like on that roadway?
Well, Sasha, actually, I didn't take the Pike. I took Route 9, and you sort of jumped the gun. I am not quite at the MEMA bunker. I'm pulling into the MEMA bunker as we speak.
Okay.
And I think that in of itself is indicative of how the roads are right now. I left about an hour and a half ago. We're 15 miles away from where the station is. Took an hour and a half. That's usually a 30-minute drive. So
90 minutes from, say, the Kenmore Square area out to Framingham right at this point.
That's right. So, you know, the roads right now, it's not so much that they're terrible. They're actually quite passable. I feel, you know, very comfortable going 40 miles an hour. The issue is there's a lot of people on the roads. Now, state authorities have told people, if you don't need to be on the roads, please stay off them. Right now, the thing is we have a lot of people leaving work early trying to get home. So right now may actually be the heavier part of the commute.
Did you say you actually are at the bunker? Did you just get there recently?
I am pulling in as we speak.
So you haven't had a chance too much to get debriefed by state officials there, but you were, I believe, at a press conference earlier today where state officials were offering a lot of weather-related advice, like make sure you clear snow out of your car exhaust pipes to avoid possible carbon monoxide poisoning. Any other tips worth repeating?
Well, the big thing, you know, that authorities are talking about is the temperature. Now, we're talking about tomorrow night, we're going to see temperatures dropping down to, you know, as low as -6 degrees, count the wind chill, you're talking -25 degrees. That is absolutely life-threatening temperature. So what the governor was stressing and what a lot of state public safety authorities are stressing, make sure you have an emergency kit on hand. We're talking bottled water, we're talking canned food, non-perishables, that sort of thing. And also make sure you have a plan to stay warm in case the power goes out. We are looking at potential power outages with heavy winds around the state. Make sure you have someplace warm you can go if your power does go out.
Jack, thank you very much. That's WBUR's Jack Lepiarz. He'll be on the channel, the station, throughout this afternoon giving us updates. And for the latest on the storm and a full list of school closures for tomorrow, go to our website, WBUR.org. Stay with us. Coming up, Boston visionary Dr. Jim O'Connell, who's been a pioneer in providing homeless people with medical care. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.